Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there, everybody. Welcome into Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester here with you on a Tuesday. Glad to be with you. Ready to have some fun. It is the All-Star Game. We had the Home Run Derby last night. Pretty good derby. Pretty good derby. Not the same star power as we're used to, I don't think, but I thought a good derby overall. We got to see some of baseball's young stars really get after it. And the Big Dumper continues his dream season. Cal Raleigh, first catcher ever to win the derby, which is surprising. I thought Piazza had one. But Raleigh gets it done. We've got that. We got a lot of football to talk today, too. We'll have our Chiefs insider, Felix Johnson, join the show. We've got drama, potentially, in the stadium debate. Predictable drama, if you ask me, but we'll get into that as well. We get ready for an All-Star game tonight. We've got a big deadline for the Chiefs and one of their star players coming up today. All kinds of good stuff for you today. We'll give away a little HTO as well. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, WBC Delano's debut brew, Hatfield's Mama, a German Kolsch with a clean, crisp character, smooth and refreshing. Make history with Hatfield's Mama, Wichita Brewing Company, Delano's debut brew, and it'll be available at all three Wichita Brewing Company brew pubs. I love Kolsch. Can't wait to try that beer from the Wichita Brewing Company. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Happy All-Star Game Day today. It was fun to watch that Home Run Derby last night. Of course, I'm a Braves fan, so having everything at Truist Park in Atlanta is a lot of fun. That's one of my favorite parks in Major League Baseball. Sure. And so looking forward to the game tonight, and we've got a lot to get to.
Truist Park, a kind of prototype for what you would envision a Royals stadium on the Kansas side looking like. They had so many great overhead shots and everything yesterday, which would give you some indication of what the area around a ballpark could look like potentially. So we'll have that for you. It is a great day to be around this show. We're going to have a lot of fun today. You can listen to us, of course, on KFH and call us that way at 869-1240. Max has that phone line ready for you. All the video streams, we appreciate you there as well. 12 News Connected. And of course, you can watch and leave comments on Facebook, on YouTube, on X as well. Listen to us on the Odyssey app. You can leave us voice messages, believe it or not. Just hit the little microphone. And new to the show, we're glad you're listening to us on the iHeartRadio app. Tommy, you bigger into the Derby, you think? What are you more locked into, the Derby or the All-Star game itself?
I think historically the Derby, and I don't think recently that's been the case, but going back to like the 90s when those guys were hitting mass home runs and you had Chris Berman on the call, like you couldn't beat the Home Run Derby with Griffey and McGuire and Sosa and Bonds and, those guys doing it year in and year out. So it doesn't really quite hit the same for me nowadays as it used to, and that's probably nostalgia playing a role a little bit, but I would say nowadays it's the actual game. When I was a kid, it was probably the Derby.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. When I was a kid, I didn't miss a second of the All-Star game itself. I loved the All-Star game. I loved seeing Texas Rangers play in the All-Star game. So that was a big deal. Now it's kind of flipped. When they, believe it or not, and I didn't like the rule. In fact, I think it may have cost the Rangers a World Series. I didn't like the home field advantage thing. I was okay with it, kind of in the beginning of like, oh, that might be fun. And then it's like, this is ridiculous. You can't determine it that way. And kind of since then, I haven't locked in as much to the game itself. I still watch, but I kind of lock into the Derby. Each of the kids, we all kind of took our pick last night and we had fuzz first time they really watched one and we all kind of locked in that way. That was fun. So it was good, but they're both good. I still contend they're collectively the best all-star thing that happens across sports.
I would agree with that. I would absolutely agree with that. I don't know anybody that really gets into the Pro Bowl anymore these days in the NFL. With the way that they changed everything. And it doesn't really do anything for me. And then the NBA All-Star game is probably second to Major League Baseball. It's fine. It's not incredible, but it's fine. You know, and I, from what I know, and I don't know much about the NHL All-Star game, but from what I've heard, it's pretty good.
I've heard it's good.
But Major League Baseball has got to be head and shoulders above everybody else when it comes to what they do for all the All-Star festivities.
Was it the NHL All-Star game that granted us USA versus Canada in that situation this year that was so amazing?
I think maybe I don't know
something to do with it. Whatever it was. And I'm glad the NBA is going this route, kind of America versus the world.
Max tells me it's the Four Nations deal with the NHL.
So they did that. So that was an incredible idea. That was the best All-Star festivity we've had in forever. Of course, in Major League Baseball, American League has won all but one All-Star game since 2013. The National League got it a couple of years ago. So that streak was fun to watch. But could you, and baseball is not going to do this because they have the World Baseball Classic, but could you imagine USA versus everybody else? We'd probably get killed because in baseball, so much of it comes internationally.
Yeah, it'd be, you know, the Dominican Republic or, you know, Venezuela.
You could put the Dominican against the rest of the world.
Right.
And probably it would
it'd probably be good.
But we get the World Baseball Classic, so we don't really need that. And that's coming this year, which I love the World Baseball Classic. But anyway, it was fun last night. It was fun for my kids to each, you know, take a pick, and they were trying to talk me into, like, do we bet on this? And like, for me, I'm like, well, yeah, we should. But, you know, mom's in the other room. I'm like, no, we're not going to do that. And like, well, did you bet on it? And I'm like, well, yeah, I did. Buxton was my guy. He didn't make it three. He had a nice showing though. It was good. I didn't think Raleigh was going to be able to do it. Man, what a year for Cal Raleigh. Now you kind of watch it and like, don't you just want him to get all of it? Like, I want him to get up there around Mickey Mantle's switch hitter home run record. I want him to break the catcher record. Like, I want it all for Cal Raleigh. It's just been out of nowhere for this guy, and I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, because he's been in the league for a few years now, and he's broken on.
He's been a good player.
He's been good, but from a power perspective and what he's doing hitting home runs, we've not seen this before. It's pretty crazy.
It's wild, and obviously you don't go win a home run derby unless it's real. You talk about stamina and power. You have to have all of that stuff. But even the young stars, I thought, you know, probably not a lot of people know who James Wood is because the Nationals haven't been very good during his rise, and he hits his absolute monster bombs. I think people probably are a little more aware of O'Neill Cruz, but you get to see a good look at why he could be as talented as any player. Like, it was a nice display for baseball, even though you'd like to get Judge or Otani or, you know, like get even Acuna if he could have done it, like get some of those guys in there. I thought they did a nice job and maybe made some stars of the future. No Royals there, but plenty of Royals tonight in the actual All-Star game. You'd have to imagine Bobby Witt Jr. will play, and then it's kind of all bets are off from there. You don't really know if anybody else will actually get into the game, but we'll see. We'll see if they do. Carlos Estevez, I would guess, does, because he's a bullpen guy, but we'll have to just kind of tune in and watch a little bit. But nothing on the line. I root for the American League, and we'll see if they can get it done tonight. Maybe I'll find a way to bet that game. That's what I'll do before the end of the show. I'll find a bet to put down.
I'm a National League guy. I'm trying to have the National League get it done, and especially for Atlanta and Truist Park.
Can you at least admit now that the DH is better?
Oh, 100%. I've never fought that. I think it's a great thing for both leagues. I don't know why the National League resisted it for so long.
National League people, I'm like, guys, just trust me. Just get it for a second. You'll see. It's better. All right, we'll come back. Let's talk a little politics on the show. Don't worry. It has to do with the stadiums. We'll be right back.
Let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Mornings at KFH. Staff enjoys a cup of coffee, a great cup of coffee from Prairie Fire Coffee. We appreciate their support and their delicious beverage that they have all across the Odyssey studios. We welcome you back in here. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster. Felix Johnson joins us in the next hour. We'll get with him, get you the latest on Trey Smith, have that discussion as we make our way through the show today. But Tommy, boy, they just can't leave well enough alone, can they? You have nice things, and then the politicians come out and start playing politics. And in the most pretty, what did I tell you? What did I tell you when that letter was written from Mark Donovan? It just like this all has been so predictable politically to me. In the letter from Mark Donovan to the state of Kansas and lawmakers, there was that little barb in there of, you know, we haven't really heard anything back on our last offers from the administration. And I'm like, that's interesting. That's strange. Get that confirmed that in the reply from Ty Masterson, the Senate president, a Republican who's probably going to run for governor, it sounds like. We have to figure out what's going on with that lack of reply. Like, okay, all right, that's just weird. Like, can we just come, you know, is that you talking about the governor's office there? Yeah. We're talking about, okay. Governor's Democrat. And there's an election coming up, by the way, pretty soon. Now, as KC Starr reports yesterday, Masterson's on the radio in Kansas City, and he's been accusing the governor's office of wanting the Royals more than the Chiefs. Apparently, he asked Mark Donovan to send a letter to relight the fire. So now here we go. Here we go. Tommy, the politicians are involved now. We went so long with this like perfect unison of like Kansas lawmakers are aligned on this. They got to the betting. They got to the star bonds. They get to all of these things to try and unify and bring them over. And here comes an election year, and here come the politics. So now it's Republicans want the Chiefs and Democrats want the Royals more. Like, what? The star bond has them like in the language that they both come like, why do we have to do this? Why do we have to insert politics into everything? It's so lame.
That's just the way things are. It's the way the world works. It's the way the world works. I do think that there is a decent amount of stadium talk fatigue going on right now. I think generally speaking, with people that are following it, like they're kind of tired of hearing about it. They're kind of tired of hearing about a different new development every single day. And speculation here and what's going to happen there and all these different things. And then you add in politics on top of it. And I'm sure that just makes that fatigue go through the absolute roof, because there's nothing more that I like talking about than politics getting in the way of a good stadium debate. It's unfortunate, but it's predictable. I think it's remarkable that we're just now getting really this partisan divide. And this has been, I mean, the whole stadium debate and the whole stadium situation has gone on for a couple of years now, and we're literally just now getting a pretty heavy partisan divide in all of this. Kind of remarkable it took this long to get there.
I don't know if we are actually getting it, but they're trying to create it.
Well, it's all manufactured, right? Like it doesn't matter if we're talking about professional sports teams or something else. If there's a way to wedge politics in there, then that's what's going to happen. And for politicians to use it to their advantage to try to garner support and votes and you name it, that's just the way that the world works today. It's unfortunate. I'm kind of, desensitized to it a little bit because it happens so much, but it doesn't make it any better. And it takes away from the whole reason that this whole situation got started, and that is to find a new home for these two teams and to help, you know, potentially have a great export for the state of Kansas and tourism.
Well, and like, what are you saying to the prospective teams when you're painting this picture that some politicians want one of them more than the other politicians want. I can tell you this with confidence, and this is my opinion and nothing else. Take it for what it's worth. If we weren't coming up on an election, this wouldn't be happening. Right? The timing is so, again, it's just all so predictable. Like, what does it matter if, I mean, there are lots of us that are having discussions about, boy, if it's just one, which one do you think would be better for the state? Would it be the team that, you know, brings the potential of a dome and a Super Bowl and all the events and the greatest, you know, show in the world in NFL football? Or would it be the one that has 81 home dates? How many times, Tommy, have we had that exact same conversation? Well, if you could just have one, which one do you think would be better for the state? Like, what are we doing? Why does that need to be out public facing? That's not good. That's what Missouri does. That's what they do in Missouri, right? Like, send that crap over there. Like, over here, you guys hammered through wagering in anticipation of this. You hammered through a star bond, big ones, biggest the state's ever done in anticipation of this. Like, there was all this cohesion. You've got a largely politically motivated to one side state with a governor of the other side. Like, this is a state where usually outside of these dadgum elections, like, puts that stuff to the side and tries to do what it thinks. And it's not always right. Of course, it's not always right, but tries to do what it thinks is best for the state. And right now, what's best for the state is not a public facing debate. It'd be like having a public debate with your wife about one of your kids is your favorite. Like, why? What good does that serve at all? The governor's office accusing special interest groups of trying to basically grease palms on the other side. And so, like, now it's getting nasty. Now it's getting nasty. Do that stuff after you secure the deal, right? If you need to get into that palm grease, whatever, you're like, it's just, here we go. Here we go. It's so stupid. It drives me insane. I can't stand it. Hopefully they all grow up and realize this is either a good idea or a bad idea for the state of Kansas. And it's not either way going to be because of a Republican or a Democrat thought it up. Like, nobody's going to get to take credit for this one. This was a collective governing effort from all parties involved, from what I can tell. And now everyone's going to try and dunk on each other, and we'll see what that does. I don't know if it hurts the chances ultimately. Probably these teams don't care because they're adults and they know how this works. So we'll find out. It's an interesting development, but man, I told you the second that sentence or whatever was in that letter, I'm like, oh, crap. Here we go. This is a dig. This is a partisan dig right here. And here we go. It's gonna go that direction. And I hope that it doesn't in the actual negotiations, and it continues to be a good faith, here's what's good for the state and not what's good for my political future conversation.
Well, think about the amount of time that we've spent and others have spent in criticizing the state of Missouri for not being able to get their crap together to get something done, you know, and all of the backbiting and arguing and debating and fighting and whatever. At the lawmaker level in the state of Missouri, where like they went back and forth for so long and couldn't get anything figured out, and whether or not they should have gotten something figured out, that's not even the debate. I mean, because I know that there were people in the state of Missouri, and honestly, there are lawmakers in the state of Kansas as well that don't think that this is something that money should be spent on. Like, both sides are sure. There are people
that's
like that.
That's the conversation to have.
Right, like that's an okay conversation to have. And so it's not even about what they were arguing about or what they were fighting about in Missouri. It's just simply the fact that they couldn't come together for the longest time. And the fact that there was such a delay in the state of Missouri in getting something figured out, because the voters voted it down in Jackson County, and then the lawmakers were like, well, let's see if there's a way we can do something at our level. And it took so long that allowed the state of Kansas to really swoop in, because Kansas at that time had their crap together enough to, and had the mechanism with the star bonds and all of that to be able to get something done. Now you fast forward, Missouri's gotten their deal done as far as what they can offer both of these teams. Kansas has an offer on the table, but things have stalled a little bit. And regardless of where it's coming from, regardless if the governor's office isn't responding or if that's manufactured or whatever the situation might be, everything that we have been poking fun at Missouri about and their lawmakers about. It's now starting to happen in the state of Kansas, where you're starting to see that divide and you're starting to see finger pointing and accusations and things like that. And for me, I think the only thing that is really disappointing about it is that for the longest time, I was proud. I'm like, you know what? Look at our neighbors to the east and look at the dysfunction that they've got going on in their Capitol building and all of that, because they can't get their stuff figured out. And when we've got everything, everybody's aligned and we're all agreeing and everything in Kansas until now. And it's embarrassing.
Well, it is. It's embarrassing because it doesn't need to be front facing. These are discussions that you can have, very important, very critical discussions. Again, we've been having them forever. If it was one, which would you prefer? But you designed the law to take both, right? You didn't design the law to only take one. So why would you do that, A? And it just, like, again, if there, it doesn't have to be out in the open public like this. It doesn't do any good, because what's going to happen now? You're going to get one side feeling the need to defend itself, and then it just turns into this back and forth. And it's like, guys, like, there's not like a, this isn't, you know, this isn't some political fundamental debate that you need to, feel like to get your barbs in. You're having a real discussion that impacts the Kansas economy. If, you know, what are the important things to each one? Like, what should we be willing to provide one side? What should we be willing to provide the other? How do we project this out? When does it pay these star bonds off? How many jobs does it bring in? How much payroll does it add to the Kansas economy? How many jobs does it add to the Kansas economy? Like, all of this stuff, we don't need to be out in the open blaming the other side. If the governor's office dropped the ball with the Chiefs because they want the Royals more, that's a big problem. And it should be solved internally, if at all possible, because there are mechanisms in place to solve it. And the thing about the letter from Donovan is, especially if it was asked for, well, of course he's going to take that jab if he thinks it's going to sweeten the pot for the Chiefs. Don't allow the Chiefs to sweeten the pot. You've sweetened their pot plenty. If they don't want to take 70%, let them stay in Missouri. But we don't, you know, like, it's just whatever.
Well, and there is another development that came out yesterday. Sam McDowell from the Kansas City Star wrote about Frank White, and he's under a lot of controversy right now anyway in Jackson County. But he did send the Missouri governor a letter yesterday talking about that he is open to now supporting a sales tax in Jackson County that's earmarked for a renovated Arrowhead Stadium. And so he basically said that he would back an extension of the sales tax, a third of it reserved for an Arrowhead Stadium makeover, and then other things in the county that he feels like are priorities. That's where the remainder of it would go. Now, I have no idea if this will even be taken seriously, because the Chiefs now have options where they didn't have options before when they were talking with Frank White in Jackson County. But I do think that that is an interesting development, because for the longest time, Frank White was just like, yeah, no, I'm not interested in anything. And so he's starting to come around a little bit. And so it makes me wonder if there's any kind of attractiveness to something that would look at more of an Arrowhead Stadium makeover as opposed to a brand new stadium.
No, I think it sounds like he's sort of, to me, I read that as he's doubling down on his convictions. Like, yeah, we'll extend the sales tax, but you don't get all of it. Like, we'll use the other, if we're going to do that, we'll use the other parts to actually help the infrastructure of the county. I think it's him doubling down.
You know, I think there's a little bit of a compromise there, right? Because it went from like, yeah, I don't want anything.
Yeah,
we're not
but
do
they're,
anything.
You're offering them less than they were already getting. So, he's holding to his, he's sticking to his chest. Now,
I mean,
all
his,
of
his
this
quote,
aside, as annoyed as I am, I think we are clearly annoyed that it's becoming political. I do think that, you know, if you're going to have to, if there is a desire to only do one, if there is some reason for that, that becomes a really interesting discussion for us and for everybody. And I hope our lawmakers behind closed doors, not out in the open, of which one benefits the state more. I think about this all the time. I default to the Chiefs because it's the NFL, because it brings in potentially massive events if you dome that stadium, like the Super Bowl, like Final Fours, like concerts, which it already gets, but concerts 12 months out of the year, potentially. I think I would say the Chiefs is a better bet. It's just, it's NFL, right? So I think I would lean that way. And if you, and if there is any need or desire, if the Chiefs are going to power play their way into any pot sweetening with that, which is a part of the negotiation that is inherently going to happen. Again, my problem isn't that it is. My problem is that it's going to get public facing, which is a problem for the state of Kansas. Then I think I would still lean Chiefs. I also think the Royals are better served to be in downtown Kansas City than anywhere else. Although Truist Park last night at the All-Star Game festivities is a good example of what you can do. I would have to look at the population densities. I'd be curious about that too, of where Truist Park is versus a potential, you know, move over to the Kansas side. Like, would you be able to have enough people to justify that kind of retail that was around the stadium? But it's all happening. I hate that it's going to get into the public, but it is. Because we've got parties involved that are looking for political ambitions and defenses and all of these things that are happening. But here we go. I mean, it's continuing. And I hope that we get some resolution one way or the other soon. I think you said it and hit it right on the head. Fatigue with all of this is for sure setting in. And it's benefiting, I think, the two teams involved as much as it is anything else, because there's going to begin to be desperation for political wins here. And that means that the teams, could you imagine being, you know, like Mark Donovan and be like, hey, we need you to write a letter. Be like, oh, sure.
Yeah. What would you like me to say? Yeah.
What would you like me to say? Yeah. Yes, I will absolutely do that. You want me to say, we think you should kick in a little bit more money? I'll say that.
Yeah. Like, I remember when, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, obviously, that letter came out from Mark Donovan. And I remember reading it and I'm like, this is odd. Like, this is kind of a weird letter. And now we know that it was inspired or at least requested by Ty Masterson and all of that. And look, I get it. There's game playing. It's a game of chess, obviously. It's unfortunate that it's now all public facing. But at the end of the day, like, I think we kind of knew. I'm surprised it took this long, to be honest with you, for it to actually get kind of dirty and underhanded.
And maybe that's a part of the delay. Maybe that's why if you're really good at what you do, which of course they are, and you're the Chiefs and the Royals, you're like, you know what? Let's just sit back. Like, everyone says this is their best offer. Let's let them stew a little bit.
Yeah.
We'll get a better offer. And they will. They will.
They will, because at the end of the day, I don't care if it's Kansas or if it's Missouri. That region is not going to lose those two franchises.
No. Yeah. Like, for as fans, not a whole lot changes. I am my curious brain. I really want to know. And I wish I could, like, I want to know if this kind of thing could actually be a boon. Like, if you actually end up in the net positive. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here. You can chime in on anything you want to talk about. If you missed any of the stadium latest, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. You can leave us your comments on that as well. Let's talk about Trey Smith, Tommy. Trey Smith's deadline is later this afternoon to sign an extension or play on the franchise tag. Now, I have not seen anything, but I could have missed it, that he has any indication of not playing on that tag, a holdout. He's the only one in the NFL, which is pretty crazy. He will be the highest paid guard in football if he plays on the tag. The highest contracts are around $21 million per year. His cap is about $23 million this year. So, like, for me, when I look at that, I see what he's making. I see what the other guys are making at the position. You'd essentially have to make him the highest paid guard to break the number you have now. So, like, if I'm the Chiefs, I'm probably saying, all right, we'll go 4 years, $80 million. Let's start there. And if Trey Smith doesn't want that, honestly, say, okay, play out the year. I mean, I don't know how much pressure the Chiefs are under here, Tom. They're already making him the highest paid guard in football this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I'm really, if there is going to be an extension between now and 3 o'clock, it's being kept under wraps so much. Like, nobody knows. And as recently as 12 hours ago, Ian Rappaport last night reported That they're still having talks surrounding a multi-year deal, but it remains to be seen whether he gets one before the deadline. So even the NFL insiders don't have any information other than just talks are continuing. You know, I don't know how much weight you give to a guy like Mike Florio, but he has talked about that he's not optimistic that they will complete an extension by the deadline. So, who knows? I don't think anybody really has an idea on whether or not this will actually happen by 3 o'clock today.
Yeah. Florio is who he is. I have a hard time because his is like his opinion with his actual reporting blends so much that I never know, like, which am I getting? Just your opinion? Because right. I'm doubtful that it happens too. Or is there anything that you've actually heard that makes you think that? So I'm not sure.
And one of the things that the justification for Mike Florio talking about all of this, which is interesting, and I haven't thought about this before. So he says that Trey Smith's perspective in his mind is that because of the fact that the Chiefs are going so far deep into the postseason every single year, that he's playing more games than other guards will and has, you know, over the last 4 years. So his point is that Smith has played 13 extra games in 4 years, and he's taken 100% of the snaps in every single one of them. And so the perspective from Trey Smith is his new contract needs to have more money in it because of the fact that he's consistently playing more snaps and more games every single year than comparable players in the NFL, because consistently the Chiefs are making deep runs in the playoffs.
They get paid. NFL players get paid to right. play in the playoffs. So I'm just
telling you what Florio's opinion is on that.
It's not a ton, right? I don't think it's equivalent to their salary.
He goes on to say that his deal in his mind, that he thinks that Trey Smith's deal needs to contemplate something more than the paltry playoff checks for the 3 extra games or 4 extra games he has played every single year.
That would be equivalent to me going to my bosses and saying, hey, we've had severe weather 4 times this year that's made me have to stay past when I'm supposed to stay. I'm going to need you guys. Like, no. Like, there are things in the job that, like, yeah, no. And if I'm the Chiefs, like, that's a cute effort, but get out of here with that. Like, okay, go play for somebody who doesn't make the playoffs every year. If that really matters, right? Like, there's no, like, that's not going to work. It's not going to work. Because no other player cares. And he doesn't care either. He wants to play in the playoffs. He's a professional athlete that's competitive. But it's a nice try. If it's not going to work, it's not going to change anything. The bottom line is the Chiefs have to decide if they want to allocate that many resources. They already dumped a bunch of money into Creed Humphrey. Do you want to allocate those kinds of resources to your interior linemen? And honestly, if Trey Smith, if he just wants to be the highest paid guard, which he has every right to want to be the highest paid guard, and he will be the highest paid guard if he plays on the cap this year. I mean, if he plays on the tag this year, then that's all fine. But if he wants a long-term deal to reset the market as a guard, is that really the best way for the Chiefs to use their money? And let me say this, and I should have said this off the top. Trey Smith is one of my favorite linemen to watch, maybe ever. I think Trey Smith is awesome. I'm not sure if I'm the Chiefs. I'm wanting to be in the business of spending that kind of money on a guard when I don't run the football. Right? The Chiefs don't run the ball. And they just took Simmons, and they just brought in more depth at the position. And eventually they still probably like the upside of Wanya Morris and Kingsley Suamataia. Like, you have backup plans in place beyond this year. And oh, by the way, they have been awesome at drafting interior linemen over the years. So, like, to me, and I hate saying it this way because I love the player, what benefit is there for the Chiefs to sign a long-term deal making Trey Smith the highest paid guard in football?
Well, I think you've got consistency, stability, like that sort of thing. While they've been great at drafting interior offensive linemen, and you're absolutely right about that. Look at Creed Humphrey, look at Trey Smith, like all of that. There's been instability on, you know, other places on the offensive line. And so if you can at least get the interior of it locked up, you know, then at that point, at least that's one thing you don't have to worry about down the road. I do think there is a scenario that I know we talked a lot about the different ways this could play out yesterday on the show. One potential scenario that I didn't think about until this morning that could potentially, I could see happening. Maybe the Chiefs and Trey Smith are just content to let him play on the franchise tag this year. And then after this year, remember, you've got Juwan Taylor's contract coming off your books after next year. And so maybe it's, hey, we're going to have you play on the tag this year, and then we'll talk about an extension and see if we can get you done after we get Juwan Taylor's contract off of our books. Because that is, I mean, you look at the top three guys, the number against the cap on the Chiefs right now, it's Patrick Mahomes, it's Chris Jones, and it's Juwan Taylor. And so if you can get Juwan Taylor out of there, which they're going to, we've been talking about that forever. That's been telegraphed forever that they're not going to re-sign him, that he's going to be gone after this season. Then at that point, you do have more cap room to play with. And that could be a scenario where I guess Trey Smith could potentially be tagged a second time. He won't be, though. I think that they will try, you know, if they don't get it done now, the thought will be, let's try to get something done once Taylor's contract comes off our books.
And that's a nice excuse for the Chiefs, and I think there's reality, but the other reality is they could still do the deal now, knowing that his contract's coming off the books. They have $10 million right now, you know, in cap room, so they could. I think you have a conversation with Patrick Mahomes, first and foremost, as you always should. I think you have to understand, like for me, again, as much as I love the player, like you have to understand what is our team built around. Having two tackles is more important to me. Mahomes doesn't pressure up the middle. You never want to see that against the Chiefs. You never want to see that against anybody. But Mahomes is rolling out on a lot of his stuff anyway. Like I think you may look at the teams that pay their guards. I think it's the Eagles just did. I think the Colts do. Like these are teams that run the ball a ton. Right? The Chiefs don't run the ball a ton. It doesn't make sense stylistically, as much as I love the player, to commit that kind of dollars there until you know you have tackle solved. Now, that doesn't mean I don't think the Chiefs should sign up Trey Smith long term. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying doing it right now makes no sense to me. I don't know why they would, because they can just play him out on the cap. He's already going to be the highest paid guard in football this year. Let him play the cap, not necessarily because Juwan Taylor, because you know you're going to get rid of Juwan Taylor, but to extend the goalpost and see if Jalen Moore and Josh Simmons can be your bookend guys. And then you approach it from there. Okay, now here's what we need. We know we have those guys. Also, to see how left guard works out. How does Caliendo look as a starter?
Well, it's not going to be Caliendo. It's going to be Kingsley Suamataia to start the season, right?
Right now, their depth chart lists Caliendo is why I bring him up. But
I do think that there is, you know, a little bit of truth to that. I think you've got to keep an eye on what happens at left guard, because they're trying to find a way to make Kingsley Suamataia a starting offensive lineman in some capacity, whatever that looks like. And it looks like it's going to be left guard. But that remains to be seen if he can actually play that position or not. And so what you don't want to have happen is you don't want to have a situation where you don't have Trey Smith and you don't have left guard. And then you've got holes on both sides of the line interior. So I do think that that is something that, you know, you have to keep in mind also. And I think even if Kingsley Suamataia turns into an okay starter, he's not going to be Trey Smith. And so
You can pay him as the highest paid guard. He's that good. I just don't know if the Chiefs should yet, right? What if this contract cut, waiting for the Chiefs also buys you time to look at the young secondary and the young pass rushers you just drafted? Are any of these guys replacing the high-priced free agents we're going to have? Because if they can't, then that intensifies the pressure to bring back McDuffie or bring back Karlaftis or Smith. Like, the Chiefs have every benefit to wait because they can see what the reinforcements look like and know where they've got to allocate their dollars. We know that the Chiefs have an appetite to pay a guard. Joe Tooney was well compensated with Kansas City, right? So it's not like they just don't want to pay a guard. I think if I'm the Chiefs, so I just want to see this all play out. That's why, like, the deadline today, I'm like, nah, there's, I can't find the benefit to the Chiefs. Maybe I'm missing something, but I can't find the benefit to the Chiefs of a long-term deal now versus just letting him play out the tag this year.
Well, the benefit to the Chiefs, at least in the short term, is that the average annual value that they're going to get is going to be less if they sign him to a long-term deal than what they're going to be paying him on the tag this year.
By $1 million or $2 million. So then still instead gonna be of less. $10 million, they have $12 million. What are they going to do with that money?
Long-term. I'm talking long-term also. Like, you've got
him. Well, yeah, but you can, but that you can have that discussion after the season.
You're right, but there is a scenario. Like, he could always play. There could be a franchise tag opportunity for a second year too. Like, that happens in the NFL occasionally. Not that it would happen in this scenario, but
no, because he'd hold out.
He would definitely hold out. So, I mean, you're avoiding a long-term logjam if you can just get it done now. Get him locked up, long-term deal. And I also believe, and I said this yesterday, the Chiefs have telegraphed this, in my opinion. You don't trade Joe Tooney without the idea of having a long-term deal done with Trey Smith. That's
right.
Just the way that they I think they telegraphed this.
We'll continue, and then we'll get into it with Felix Johnson. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Another hour of Sports Daily coming up. All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you. It is a Tuesday. We are glad to be with you on a Tuesday. And every day, whether you're listening to us over the air on KFH, whether you are watching us on our video streams on 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube, X, or whether you're listening to us on either the Odyssey app, the iHeartRadio app, we appreciate you each and every way that you join the program. We are getting closer to football season. Our guy Felix Johnson is going to be in next segment. We'll get with him on this Trey Smith discussion we're having and everything else going on in the football world, in the Chiefs world as well. And then maybe a little bit more on the Royals as we continue to look ahead to their second half. I saw another trade rumor involving Seth Lugo that made me want to vomit last night. So we'll get to that a little bit later. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, locations East, West, and historic Delano, featuring a rooftop deck. Wichita Brewing Company, pizza, beer made here. We'll get you an HTO giveaway a little bit later in the show. And we want to say thank you to Crestview Country Club for their great support of the program. Tommy, they're going to have to, they got to do a little tree work. That storm, it was so remarkable that everybody got the Wichita Open off, but now the storm, we were playing out there the other day and they've marked a bunch of trees. They've got to get that cleaned up from storm damage and a variety of other things. It'll feel a little different. So if you've played Crestview in about 2 or 3 weeks, I don't know how long this work's going to take. It's going to probably, you know this better than I do. It's probably going to play as a different golf course in a lot of ways.
Well, it'll play probably easier, at least for some holes where you don't have to worry about navigating through the trees, right, and that sort of thing. But yeah, they've got a lot of work ahead of them. They've already done a bunch of cleanup, but there are some trees that, because of the damage that came through last month, that they've got to fully remove. And so they'll be working on that for the next few weeks. But what I like about it is, you know, they're very communicative to everybody out there. Like, hey, we're doing this. There might be some shifts in tee times and hole closures and things like that, but there are two courses. And so you have the option and the opportunity to go and play. You know, they're not going to shut down both at the same time. So it's not, it shouldn't really negatively impact a lot of people out there.
We're trying to play Friday. We might play like front nine on one of them and back nine on the other. We're going to try and piece together 18 holes. And you get those options even when the work's happening. So we appreciate their support of the program. Give Crestview a call. Give Todd a call, who does memberships, and ask him about all the deals and packages that they've got going right now. We continue on here. The Trey Smith, just to continue what you said, and then we'll talk to Felix Johnson about this. And I think, yes, Tommy, there is clarity in the extension now. But again, unless he's willing to take less money, I still don't think it benefits the Chiefs in any way to do it yet. So he's going to, on the tag, be the highest paid guard. If he'll come back and, let's say, take 4 years and $80 million, which would not make him the highest paid guard, it'd put him right there. Then I would have some appetite for the Chiefs. Like, if I'm the Chiefs, I'm like, okay, there's some incentive for us to do that. Otherwise, he's on the tag going to make the most this year. So if you wait till the offseason and he still wants to be the highest paid guard, his price didn't go up. You know what I mean? Like, if his price tag right now is basically a long term, because I believe it's 21-ish million for the highest paid guard right now in football. Smith's going to make 23. If he wants to make 23 over time and be the highest paid guard now, it's essentially going to be the same price tag as if they waited. What's he going to say? He wants to come back and make 28? Because they'll never do it, right? And he has to know that. No team would do that. So if he is going to reset the market anyway, I don't think the timing component matters whether it's now or the end of this season. It's if he takes a slight discount that if I'm the Chiefs, I'm interested in doing it now versus later. But again, you have to make sure your tackle situation is secure, whether that's Josh Simmons and Jalen Moore on the bookends after this season and some combination of Caliendo, Suamataia, Wanye Morris in a swing role. Like, you got to know what you need first before you make the big commitment to Smith. If I'm the Chiefs, I just have to look at it that way. And if you're wondering what the urgency on Smith's end might be, what if the Chiefs over the course of this season learn that Suamataia and Wanye Morris are both really good as guards? You think they're going to pay Trey Smith $23 million a year? Because they won't.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that's necessarily the risk to Trey Smith, because I'm not sure that either one of those guys are going to be anything incredible.
It's injury.
It is 100% injury.
But I think that's a risk.
And if I'm Trey Smith, why not cash in on the great play that I've had over the last 4 years in my career? Why not try to cash in with that right now and have some stability?
Well, he is cashing in. I mean, he's going to be the highest paid guard in football this year.
I understand that, but why not cash in long term? Why not ink that contract now?
But what I'm saying is, and I don't have a problem with that, it's got to be less than resetting the market, though. You know what I mean? Like, cash in for sure. He should. He's awesome.
Right.
And I hope he does.
But that's the leverage. But, like, I think that's the leverage the Chiefs have a little bit in this, is that their argument to Trey Smith ought to be, look, like, if what happens if you play on this franchise tag? And yeah, you'll be the highest paid guard in the NFL for one season. But what happens if you get hurt? What happens if, you know, and your leverage totally goes away and your value drops significantly and you decide you do want to hit the open market and you end up getting a lot less money? Like, that's always the major risk in not cashing in and signing a long-term deal when it's presented to you. The way that I see it right now is that nothing is guaranteed in life. We have no idea. And it might not even be injury risk. It might be you see a regression in his overall skills in this coming year. I think that's unlikely, but you never know. And so you know what you have. You know what your value is right now. You don't know what it's going to be a year from now. Maybe it'll go up, but maybe it won't. And so why not cash in on that right now if you're Trey Smith and go, and I'm sure that his representation is doing this, at least I would hope they are, not going into a situation saying we want to reset the market long term, but more of, hey, we want to cash in appropriately. He can be the highest paid guard in the NFL long term, but we're not going to try to have some kind of absolutely outrageous contract ask.
I don't think it's outrageous. I think they probably are trying to reset the market by a million or two. But again, like, to me, the Chiefs hold all the chips here. There is absolutely no urgency to me that I can come up with for the Chiefs to want to do to cave on this. Like, they don't need to. There's nothing pushing them into doing that, right? What is the risk of the Chiefs waiting? If he walks, he walks. But I just don't see the risk. I mean, by waiting, you are alleviating your inherent risk of injury, obviously, by not doing it now if you're the Chiefs. You have an easy justification with the tag paying him, you know, tackle money, basically, that you're like, there's no reason for him to hold out.
I mean, look, you did ask the question about how does it benefit the Chiefs to not have him play on the tag this year, and whether we're talking $1 million or $2 million or $3 million in cap space that they free up, they may not go and get anybody right away, but there are always situations where during the season they could use a couple extra $1 million in salary cap space and flexibility to be able to try to figure out a free agent situation due to injury or whatever the case might be. They've done that so many times throughout the years. Every team does. And if you're in a situation, and it could come down to having an extra $1 million laying around or $2 million laying around just as an emergency backup fund for during the season to go and try to get better for a playoff push or whatever the case might be, that may be reason in and of itself to try to free up even a couple $1 million by converting what he's going to be making on the franchise tag to what they would be getting in a long-term deal.
But they have $10 million free now. They have that. Like they're
right now they do. They might not win. We get to week 14 or
right,
week 15.
But if you might not have 10 if you utilize some of that for Trey Smith. What if he says he wants $24 million on a, you know what I mean? Like I don't know what he wants, and that's what makes this a little trickier. We don't know exactly what he's asking for. I hope that Trey Smith is a Chief forever. He is awesome. I just, in this particular negotiation, can't find the good reason why the Chiefs should jump the gun here. We'll see if Felix Johnson has one. He's an offensive line guy. It would be different if the Chiefs ran the ball a ton and you know needed that critically to the future. But the Chiefs ain't gonna run the ball this year. The Chiefs ain't gonna run the ball next year, or probably the year after that, I wouldn't think, not the way they've drafted wide receiver and have invested in tackles and wide receivers. They just, like, they want to throw the ball. They have Mahomes. They want to do it that way. It's Andy Reid. That's what they do. They're not going to line up and run it as much as the Eagles or the Colts or some of these other teams that have also paid guards heavily. But the Chiefs will do it. They paid Joe Tooney. They paid Joe Tooney a lot. So they paid Creed Humphrey, too. We'll see. Deadline is today. We'll get Felix Johnson's take on that. We'll get you that Seth Lugo trade rumor. And Tommy's found something here. Apparently NCAA tournament expansion could come into beer sponsorships, which is interesting. It's all coming for you. Felix Johnson's next. Don't go away. More Sports Daily coming right up.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Let's give away a little HTO for you here. We are still trying to connect with Felix Johnson, but you can win some HTO right now. You can text the keyword T to the short code 20357. Again, that's T to 20357. You can get a free iced tea on us. Good for East Wichita, West Wichita, or Derby. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck there, everybody. If you come to West Wichita on Saturday, you will have a chance from 11 to 8 to get some lobster from the Maine's Cousins Lobster Food Truck. Famous food truck coming into town. So come out Saturday, get your free tea, even if you don't get a free tea, and get some lobster to go through. Tea and lobster, Tommy. That's a thing. That's what the kids on the street are saying.
It's like peanut butter and jelly, right? It's like this generation's peanut butter and jelly, tea and lobster.
That's right. Tea and lobster.
Do you say lobster or lobster? Because I know lobster. Max says lobster because he's Boston.
I don't say lobster. I'm not.
I never say lobster.
Lobster, right?
Lobster.
Lobster with lots of butter.
There you go. Butter.
How's that?
It's like butter.
It's good. I'm more of a clam chowder connoisseur up in the Northeast myself. We went to a place this weekend And you know, the kind of build your own like Mongolian grill style places.
Yeah.
My kid, there were mussels in there in the shell, like basically clams.
Yeah.
And my kids were like, oh, you know, it was the dare, like dare you, dad. I'm like, all right. Like, I'm not going to turn that down. But everyone ended up having some clam and it was fine.
There was a Stooges episode.
Like, you're going to die if you eat that. Go ahead, Max.
There was a Stooges episode where Curly had the clam chowder and the clam kept squirting him in the face.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's never happened to me.
They're a comedy team, you young
Stooges. No, I know. Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. I'm familiar with them.
We're aware. We're aware of the Stooges.
I'm familiar with their work.
Yeah. I've seen it a few times. It's when I go to the last time I went to Boston, it's been 9 years now. And I love that city. For me, like, I can't eat enough clam chowder. Like, just everywhere I go, I got to have it. Speaking of our friends at Crestview Country,
it doesn't matter if you're in Boston or if you're in Dodge City. Like, if there's clam chowder, you're going to rock.
I'm going to have some.
Clam chowder. I like clam chowder too. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm a fan of it. I'll eat it. I like seafood in general.
I like all the chowders in general too. Yeah. Not, you know, like corn chowder.
What do you like better, clam chowder or lobster bisque?
Clam chowder.
Really? Like, I'm a lobster bisque guy. Like, give that to me any day. And I don't like just like the broth. You got to have some big old chunks of lobster in the bisque.
Yeah, so my thing is, and I'm excited for this food truck to come over to the West Side store Saturday, because lobster, while fine, I've always said I want to try theirs because I've heard it's incredible. And I've never had a lobster roll, which is, I think, their main thing that they're known for. Yeah. So I'm excited to try that too. But like, if I'm going to a restaurant, instead of surf and turf, I just want the turf, right? I'd rather just have a steak. Than steak and lobster.
Really?
Lobster's not my... I don't dislike lobster. Lobster is fine, but lobster's fine. Right? It's a lot of work. It's only good because it's doused in butter. Like,
I don't know about that. It's not only good because it's doused in butter.
Well, no, but I'm saying, like, it's a sweeter meat, and I'm definitely a saltier person than I am sweet.
Yeah,
you are. So, it's good. It's good, but is it like the delicacy some people treat it as? Probably not for me. But again, I do want to try these lobster rolls this weekend because I've heard they're like the real deal awesome. But when I go to the parts of the world where lobster, like Boston, you just want all the clam chowder I can.
I mean, I think that lobster immediately elevates whatever meal that you're currently having. You throw a lobster tail on with your steak, makes it that much better. You throw in chunks of lobster into your mac and cheese, boom, it's a delicacy. You throw chunks of lobster into basically tomato soup. I know it's different. Bisque is different than that. But generally speaking, that's kind of what it is. Makes it that much better. So anything you do lobster-wise just elevates whatever you're eating.
And of the shellfish, I would rather have scallops. Scallops, I think, are better. I love scallops.
I like scallops. Like
the big ones.
Yeah, I'm not going to turn any kind of seafood down. I mean, I love shrimp. I love crab legs. Like, give it all to me. I'm
crab
a fan.
I'm also not as in on crab as most people. Again, same thing. It's kind of sweet. Like, okay. Like, it's good. It's fine. I'm not going to turn it away either. I'll eat it. I'll eat anything though. But yeah, I prefer lobster over crab. I'll say that. I don't know that I prefer it over shrimp. It's fine. They're probably on par with shrimp, but I'll take a scallop over lobster. I would take a scallop or clam chowder, which is not really comparable, but
it's not,
you know, if we're that's
an appetizer. That is not your actual meal.
No. If I have my way and I can get a bucket of it, it's no longer an appetizer.
You're the one that just said that clam chowder is not comparable to everything
because
else we just talked about.
Because soup is not a meal.
You're proving my point.
Is clam compared to lobster?
I mean, from a quality perspective, I don't know. I love oysters, by the way.
Yeah, you got me on oysters.
I love oysters on the half shell.
They were good. I don't know that it had the aphrodisiac effect I was hoping for, but it was fine. That's really the only reason I let you talk.
We don't need to know.
Hey, hang on, disclaimer, disclaimer. It was not just Tommy and I having oysters when I talked about the aphrodisiac effect.
Our wives were there. Yeah.
Our wives were there.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah. I'm not sure that it. I'm not sure it had that effect. So that was what I was really hoping for. I was like, "Yeah, let's take it down. Let's have 12." No, didn't work. John Denver's full of you know what. All right. So here's the trade rumor I saw. While we'll see if we can connect with Felix Johnson. No worries if not. Here's a trade rumor I saw last night. It made me sick to my stomach. It was Newsweek, I think, that had it, or I don't remember. Bleacher Newsweek. Report something. I think Newsweek was reporting on a Bleacher Report report. It popped up in my feed.
They were taking a break from covering the Russia-Ukraine war to talk about a Seth Lugo.
No, Newsweek's more of a magazine, I think, like a
Newsweek
style. Yeah.
Are we talking about the same Newsweek? Newsweek is like hard-hitting journalism.
Whatever it was, it popped up. I think Newsweek is more tabloidy. It popped up in my feed for some reason because I know what the reason was is because Seth Lugo was mentioned, and it was reporting a Bleacher Report, I believe. But anyway, it was Seth Lugo to the Astros. Ugh. As a trade. And I'm just like, don't do that. Like, don't do that. If the house is on fire and the Astros are the only way to, you know, save the don't do that. Don't do that, Royals. But it was interesting because they have a need. They have a fit. They've got a relatively deep farm system. But it did go into and once I read it, I was like, well, this is just somebody like pondering ideas. There wasn't any substance to it. But it did. Like, it's kind of the same thing. And it brought up the same point we've been having. But the Royals are still trying to decide what they're going to end up doing anyway. And they can absolutely justify keeping Seth Lugo for a potential playoff push. Boy, I can't remember a team more on the line with a player more on the line than this situation this year off the top of my head. Because it could go any direction. Like, no matter what the Royals decide to do, whether they're aggressive, whether they're passive, whether they're buyers, whether they're sellers, they could make a different Seth Lugo decision based on what they want to do because the market dictates that they make the decision. It's a wild one. He is a rental, but man, he's going to be the best pitcher on the market. I think even as a rental, and that hasn't clamored the same sort of like prospect return in the past, but I still think that's what you demand teams start with if they even want to pick up the phone and make the call.
I think knowing the fact that the Royals' starting rotation has started to get a little decimated here and it's getting a little tricky. Mm-hmm. Michael Lorenzen just hit the IL yesterday, and he might only miss a couple of starts, but still he's on the IL with an oblique. You've got Cole Reagans on the shelf, and we don't know what his timetable for return looks like. If you trade Seth Lugo, then all of a sudden you're looking awfully thin in what had been your deepest area on your roster. And so I understand the whole thought of getting a return for him and what if he walks and you can't re-sign him and et cetera, et cetera. But at least in the short term, I don't know what they would do starting pitcher-wise. It might very well be that if they move Seth Lugo and you've got Lorenzen on the shelf and you've got Reagans on the shelf, we could see 74-year-old Rich Hill come up and pitch.
And Daniel Lynch on the shelf.
And Daniel Lynch on the shelf as well. But you could see, you know, senior citizen Rich Hill pitching for the Royals.
They've got
another senior citizen and Dallas Keuchel in the minors. Like, you've got two guys that, I mean, Dallas Keuchel's like 37 or 38.
He's actually not that old.
But yeah. Rich Hill is like 45 years old and he's in AAA right now. And I guess apparently he's pitching decently well, but that would be your backup plan. If you move Seth Lugo and you've got Reagans, Lorenzen and Lynch all currently on the IL.
When you sent me that with Keuchel, my very first thought was, are they going to trade Lugo? My second thought was, is Reagan's okay? And now it's just like, I'm kind of glad they have him. I don't know about Keuchel. I don't know how he's done, but Rich Hill anyway, like I'm kind of glad they have this depth. I think that Lorenzen's probably okay. The timing on it, boy. And two, like, how strange is that, that it was initially illness and now it's an oblique strain?
Yeah.
And all I can think about is he was so violently ill, he strained his oblique from, like,
you ever
puking.
Been there? That's not, I mean,
yes.
You have a bad bowl of clam chowder, that'll do it for you.
Yes, it will. It'll send you right there. But man, like, yes, I have puked so hard that I pull a muscle in my stomach.
You're also not a professional athlete.
Yeah, but some people are violent pukers. I'm a violent puker. Like, if I'm going to puke, the whole house is going
to
hear it.
I don't need to know that.
But like, my wife could, and she doesn't as a habit. I don't know when the last time she threw up was, but nobody would ever know it happened. But you know what I'm talking. It's like a loud sneezer. You're either a quiet sneezer or a loud sneezer. You're either a loud puker or you're a quiet puker.
There are some things that are okay to be left to the imagination. I don't need to know how loudly you puke.
When I hear that he is ill and then has a strained oblique, that's what me. I'm like, oh man, I've been there. That sucks. But the good news, if that is the case, is that it's probably a short stay. What I hope isn't the case is that he had an oblique strain, a real one, like a real deep one or something, and they were just like, I don't know, let's say he's ill, or they didn't know what it was yet. That would be worse, because those injuries do linger.
I think is a little makes me a little bit nervous about the Lorenzen injury is the fact that he didn't pitch on Saturday. They scratched him from his start, and they said he was ill. If they felt like, okay, this is a manageable thing and not serious or whatever, you've got the All-Star break this week. And so you wouldn't need to necessarily put him on the IL if it's something where it's like, all right, well, he'll bounce back. We were able to cover for him and said that he was sick on Saturday, and then he'll have the entire week of the All-Star break to get healthy again. They didn't do that. They put him on the IL retroactive to July 11th.
And the 15, not the 10.
Right. So, I mean, I do think this is a little bit more serious than maybe what initially was thought.
Yeah, I do too. And it means he'll miss at least one start. If they reset the rotation and that starts on Friday and he can't come back till the 26th, he'll have to miss at least one turn through the rotation. So that's, I assume at this point, a bullpen game is what they'll do. Although if he's on the IL, they may call up a spot starter. I don't know. But I hope that it is something that developed from being ill and not something that it, because those core injuries, man, they feel like there's some of those that are annoying. They last a while. And for a pitcher, it's not going to, like, he has to be able to strike. You can't power through that really in baseball, whether you're swinging a bat or, you know, trying to wind up in give your full delivery. That's not good. It's not good. No. And as we have Seth Lugo discussions, their rotation continues to thin out now. You're down Reagans for a while. You're down Lorenzen. You're down Lynch as a backup plan. You're basically into the territory where you've got, you know, you got Lugo, you've got Walker, you've got Cameron, you've got Bubich. You're good. But there's not really now any sort of obvious backup plan.
Yeah, you don't have much of a margin here. And the guys that they really have liked as pitchers that we thought maybe initially would be a part of the rotation, I think injury-wise, they're still a decently far away from coming back. Guys like Alec Marsh and Kyle Wright, doesn't look like they're anywhere near coming back to the rotation. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't sign guys like Rich Hill and Dallas Keuchel
right
away from the retirement home. So I don't know if that's a plan. But man, like, what was the deepest part of their roster is all of a sudden starting to look awfully thin. And especially if they make a Seth Lugo move, it gets even more thin.
I know I like to ask you this all the time. Where do you think Seth Lugo's pitching in August?
I think he'll still be with the Royals. I don't think the Royals will move him.
I do too. That bakes in that we both think they'll be playing well over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But I agree.
They do have, we saw this yesterday, they do have the second easiest strength of schedule remaining in Major League Baseball. And they have the easiest in the American League.
We can start that discussion. Let's start it. So no matter what metric you look at, and they're all a little bit different with strength of schedule, they are near the most advantageous schedule remaining in baseball, no matter what you look at, somewhere in the best third of playing the softest schedule. Some have them like second, right? Here's what it boils down to. And remember that they're a team under 500 when I say this too, because I looked at this yesterday as a way to simplify it because everybody uses different formulas. It's basically how many series do they play against teams that are currently 500 or better or worse. And there's 21 series remaining in the season. 13 of them for the Royals right now will come against teams that are currently below 500. 13 out of 21. So it's a significant amount. And the other good thing about it is, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, three out of the next four, which will come before the trade deadline, three out of those four are teams below 500. Two, you know, I don't know what people think about the Marlins because they kind of got hot there for a second, but at least with the Nationals, like, and some of them are against really bad teams, like not just like teams like the Royals that are a couple of games under 500, but actually kind of good, like bona fide, like not very good teams. This is their opportunity to climb back in right now and over this second half. And if we do believe of all of these teams that are real close, the schedule's going to matter, right? The schedule's going to matter. And the other good thing about it is too, like when you play a bunch of teams that are currently above 500, those probably for the most part aren't the teams that you're realistically going to catch for a playoff spot. All these other teams that are kind of hovering right there, every time you play one of them, you're essentially playing a team that you've got to beat out for the wild card, which is also good news.
And remember, a year ago, they started off their season with a pretty soft schedule. They played the White Sox a ton to kick off the season last year, and that really helped propel them. The fact that, you know, they're now hovering around 500 at the All-Star break, but you know you've got a significantly easier schedule, I do think that that should play a role in the decisions that J.J. Piccolo makes. Like, it's not just where they are right now, and it's not just where they are in the wild card race right now. It's what they've got in front of them. And if it was a stacked opponent schedule for the next couple of months, it might be a little bit different. But they've got an opportunity here with the teams that they play coming up, not just in the next 2 weeks before the deadline, but after that, to really gain some ground.
Yeah, it's now or never, and that's why you hate seeing the Lorenzo news. But the reality is, and we saw this bubble up in the Mets series, you're going to have to score runs. Lorenzo doesn't have anything to do with that. They didn't score enough runs in the Mets series, so hopefully they bounce back in that way too.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And now we welcome in Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider, our football insider, joining the program. Felix, I got you. Listen, when you make us go off the rails, I debate Tommy on whether Michael Lorenzen's oblique strain came from puking too hard. So
we're glad that you're here because we need to get things back on track.
That's what happens here on Sports Daily.
I'm not the guy that gets things back on track, so I'm shocked. I'm the reliever here. That's crazy.
We come back in and let's talk a little football. Felix, you'll find him on X at Felix R. Johnson. Always doing great work in a variety of places that you can follow along with. You've got the Talk Ball podcast. You've got Arrowhead Addict and a variety of other places. So Trey Smith is the most notable thing happening with the Chiefs right now. Let's come at it this way for you. Do you think the Chiefs have the appetite for a long-term deal with Trey Smith at this point? At this point, as of July 15th for this coming season?
No. Probably just because it's a little late. Hypothetically, yes, obviously they would want to. But we've talked about it before where Trey Smith was a sixth-round pick and with a first-round talent because of all the different health issues and whatever, they kind of won that pick. They kind of won that instance already. And so it's a lot easier to say, all right, we're business can continue on. We're kind of done with that situation because he's way outpriced. And when you think about the Kansas City Chiefs are paying or will be paying if they do decide to extend Trey Smith, four out of their five offensive linemen moving forward, everybody except for their left tackle. And so it is going to be a little bit more difficult from a financial perspective to say, yeah, keep Trey Smith. But at the same time, it makes all the sense in the world because where the NFL's trending now, we're seeing a lot more guards get paid, more, not more than tackles, obviously, but just on a higher level that like a guy like Quentin Nelson is going to be a higher paid player in the NFL because he's Quentin Nelson, a guard, a high-level guard. And so Trey Smith is going to be in that category of a guy that can get paid a high amount of money by the Chiefs or otherwise. And so the Chiefs may not even be able to offer him the same amount of money, just the same way that like Joe Tooney ends up with the Chicago Bears. There may be another team out there that can offer him more money or may need him more, and the Chiefs can trade him or whatever the case may be.
I do think that there are advantages for both sides to try to get something done by the deadline today. I mean, for Trey Smith, first and foremost, nothing's ever guaranteed. I mean, what, you know, he plays on the tag this year. What if he gets injured and then the value totally goes away? And why not cash in on the 4 years that he's had of significant success to try to make that money right now and be locked in? And then for the Chiefs on the other side too, man, like I know that they're trying to see what they've got in Kingsley Suamataia on the left side, but they already have question marks at one guard position. And if you end up not having Trey Smith long-term, you may actually have question marks at both guard positions. I feel a lot more confident with the Chiefs not signing Trey Smith to a long-term deal if they knew that they had left guard shored up.
Yeah, and I think that Kansas City, again, they're a little bit flawed like every NFL team is. And I think that offensive line is at least how they go about fixing it is kind of a little bit flawed, which is kind of shocking to me that Andy Reid is a former offensive lineman. Andy Heck has been around with the team for a very long time, but I think they're like, all right, let's just fix left tackle this year and figure that out, and then we'll deal with the other situations later, because we found Trey Smith in the sixth round, because we went and got Joe Tooney in free agency, because we got Creed Humphrey in the second round, because we have Kingsley Suamataia. So I think they have other plans at the interior offensive line positions aside from left tackle, and then they're going to have to figure out right tackle at some point if the Juwan Taylor number gets too big. And so I think that Kansas City has – other priorities at the offensive line spot. I mean, obviously Trey Smith is number one, but then after that, it's like, yeah, we got to figure out left tackle and these other things. And then we can figure out the succession plan if Trey Smith were to walk with Joe Tooney already gone.
So when I look at the guards right now, Felix, I look at the highest paid guards, and Smith, of course, will make more than any of them on the tag. But Landon Dickerson is your highest paid right now, Philadelphia. Chris Lindstrom, Atlanta. Quentin Nelson, you mentioned, Indianapolis. Robert Hunt, Carolina. Those are your top guys at the moment, all making $20 million or more. And to me, I look at it and I see four teams that want to run the football. Mm-hmm. Chiefs have no interest in running the football. And I think they just, like, as much as I love Trey Smith and you love Trey Smith and everybody who's ever watched football loves Trey Smith because he's awesome, I just can't find the urgency from the Chiefs to jump the gun and not let this play out. I think they'd love to keep Trey Smith, but I think they have to have a discussion on, do we as the Chiefs who throw the ball as much as we do want to invest that much in an interior lineman?
Well, and I think that who are the Chiefs going up against the most in practice? Themselves. And so who are they going to have to defend against? It's Chris Jones. And when you look at the entirety of the NFL, you got Quinnen Williams, Dexter Lawrence, Jeffrey Simmons, a lot of different guys that are able to fit that Chris Jones type, that Aaron Donald type of interior defensive lineman. You need a guard to match up with them, whether it is in the run game or in the passing game. And so I think you're right. These are a bunch of teams that want to run the football with the Eagles, the Panthers, are different teams that want to do a bunch of different things in the run game. But at the same time, the way the NFL is kind of moving is that we're seeing more pass rushers in the interior of defensive lines like Chris Jones, like Quinnen Williams, like Dexter Lawrence. Now some teams are starting to have to shore it up in the middle with pass protectors that are at least maybe not elite like those guys, but at the same time can match up with them.
Let's talk about a couple other things going on around the NFL. So yesterday, the news came down that Garrett Wilson got his bag. It looks like a 4-year, $130 million contract from the New York Jets. That's all well and good, and he is a dynamic receiver and everything, but he's going to have Justin Fields throwing him the football this year. Were you surprised by that contract? I mean, what do you think he'll be able to do with a guy like Fields at quarterback?
I think Garrett Wilson is fine. I think he's another one of those Ohio State guys that was really, really good coming out for like about 4 or 5 years. And still, you're going to see it with Jeremiah Smith here in a few years. But I think that on a good – like he's not better than any of the 8 best receivers in the league. And so it's kind of hard for me to say that, like, oh, he's your number one that you should be building your receiver core around, and especially when you add in the fact that Justin Fields is there. But I think the Jets story is not about who their players are necessarily, which is a shocking thing for a football team. It's about Aaron Glenn coming in and trying to change the culture. I think that the Jets could have a lot of – remember, if you remember the Lions' first season under Dan Campbell, they're like 1-11, but every game was within 3 points. I think we can see a season a lot like that with the Jets. And maybe they come out on the other side of some of those wins just because their defense might be a little bit better than what the Lions was at the time. But I think Aaron Glenn, if he is going to be successful, and I think he will be, it's going to be a look a lot like that season where they might win 6 games. But at the same time, it was super close the entire time. And Garrett Wilson is going to be the highlight reel of their offense. But that's only because that's about all they have, him and Breece Hall. And so, like, it is kind of – and Breece Hall even, like, I know he's a Kansas kid and everything, but he's one head of a two-headed monster that you probably don't have a second head of in New York. And so that's what's kind of interesting with the Jets is, like, they're bringing in all these new pieces, but at the same time, they're trying to build a culture and at least going to look like the New York Jets for another season.
Breece the Beast needs to be a one-headed monster. Just feed that dude the ball. Braylon Allen, get out of here.
Sure.
Go, Breece. I saw this Felix yesterday come out. It was, I believe it was ESPN, did a poll of all the coaches and executives and everything, and it's a quarterback list. Mahomes is still at the top. The top four are very predictable. It's Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Jackson. I think those four are clearly the four. Mahomes is still one. And we have this discussion a lot, and I know that Chiefs fans get hypersensitive to ever the notion that anybody could ever do anything better than Patrick Mahomes, but I do think these other three guys deserve some credit. Mahomes had the 17th best quarterback rating in football last year. I'm with the executives. I'm still taking Mahomes over any of them. But we've seen a chink in the armor, I think, the last year especially, but the last couple of years. Have any of these guys closed the gap, you think, to be in the conversation with Mahomes yet?
If they were beating him when it mattered the most, yeah. Like, I mean, if Joe Burrow, we still kind of like have him mythologically in our heads because he beat him 3 or 4 years ago at this point. Josh Allen, the same reason
why Allen beats him all the time, just not in the playoffs.
Exactly, when it matters the most. And like they keep getting closer, like literally inches away from beating them this year. And so I think that sure, they're closing the gap in that manner, but at the same time, when you see that the Kansas City Chiefs just win 3-point games no matter what, and I think it was Nick Wright who said it last year, the Kansas City Chiefs' superpower is that they can beat anybody by 3 points, whether it's the Carolina Panthers last year, who were one of the worst teams in football, or at least it looked like it, or it can be the Buffalo Bills, who they beat by 3 points in the AFC Championship game. So it can be anybody that they beat by just 3 points. And so it's kind of hard to judge whether or not teams are really closing the gap because Kansas City beats everybody by just 3 points. And then you add in the fact that, yeah, Kansas City just keeps going to the Super Bowl and running into Buffalo over and over again. They ran into Baltimore just last year in the route to winning the Super Bowl. Cincinnati can't even get to the playoffs. And so, sure, these guys are great individually, but at the same time, when it matters the most, when we judge quarterbacks the most, which unfairly or not, when we judge quarterbacks the most, which is in the playoffs, they've come up against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs and just said, and they can't match up for one reason or another. And it's Lamar Jackson making poor throws and Josh Allen's false stepping on his tush push. And so I think that it's all these little things, but when you're playing games that are scored by 3 points, it's going to be those little things that get you.
I agree. It's still that thing. I also think, do you subscribe to this theory that Mahomes is going to cook this year statistically? I think he's going to pile it up this year like I thought he would have last year, and then all his players got hurt.
Well, I think that I think about it more from a bird's eye perspective. Like, how many MVPs do you expect Patrick Mahomes to win in his entire career? he's 30 now, so he's going to have to start picking up a couple more. I mean, if you think about it like that, I know it doesn't really matter because he's more focused on Super Bowls. I'm thinking he's going to win about four or five. He's at two right now. So I can see him picking up one right now. And that would make sense because of like what you're saying with all the guys coming back and teams just not having seen a Hollywood Brown or a Rashee Rice in this offense for a year.
Yeah, it's all there. All right, Felix, what do you have cooking for us on your radar here that we can find? I guess on X is the easiest way to look at all of it.
Yeah, we'll have another episode of Let's Talk Ball coming out tomorrow. We've been going through all the division previews. We'll be going through the AFC East, so we'll be talking about our Kansas City Chiefs here in a couple of weeks. But we had an interview with Coach Drew Dallas, head coach of the national champion Hutchinson College Blue Dragons. We had him on. That'll be coming out here in a few days. So just talking ball. That's all it is. Just talking football, especially throughout the summer when it's hard to get some football on.
Appropriately named Talk Ball Podcast. All right, Felix, we'll do it again next week. All right, that'll do it for us here on Sports Daily. We appreciate everybody being with us on the program today. A lot of fun. We've got the All-Star game tonight. I took the American League at minus 105, Tommy. You going to take your National
League? Yeah, I'm going to take the National League. I like getting plus money on them, and I'm a National League guy, so I'm hoping they can finally pull one out. They're due. They're due to get one.
Well, they got 2 years ago, but it's one out of like the last 13. So, yeah, the law of averages perhaps says they are. We appreciate everybody being here. Thanks to Felix Johnson. Thanks to Max. We'll continue the debate on oblique strains related to illness perhaps tomorrow. So for those interested in that, be ready for it. Stick with us, everybody. Thanks for being here. Bye.